Dan.
Hello, Lewis. How are you today?
I am well, thank you. I'm in the hottest room in the world. I have a window open, which is a brave move when podcasting.
Yeah.
But if my psychopathic next-door neighbour decides to, like, kill a dog in the street or something, then I will close the window.
Rather than just go out and say, hey, do that.
Stop killing dogs in the street.
I'm going to call the police now. You're just going to close your window and be like, nope.
Just look down upon it, upon the scene as it unfolds. Just like, yep.
Hear no evil, see no evil.
Yep, that's the one.
Oh, God.
Oh, crikey. Have you got some bullshit pre-prepared?
I don't, actually.
What are you doing with your life?
I know, but we could talk about some things. What's happening in the world?
Well, I have an incredibly boring piece of news, so it fits the 10-minute bullshit quite well.
Right, go on.
I had a notebook, right, that I used as like a daily sort of planner type thing. So it's like if I had an appointment, it'd go in the notebook. If I had something I needed to do, goes in the notebook. I filled up the notebook, and now I've got a new one. And that's the end of my incredibly boring story.
Wow.
Yep.
I don't know if like our equity guidelines allow us to talk about this, but the coronavirus is getting pretty scary, pretty big.
Yeah, it's a bit. I've been grocery shopping a couple of days ago, and it's a bit dramatic. Like, I went into Aldi, because in our house, we eat a lot of pasta anyway. Like, cook a lot of Italian foods.
Then, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. And I went into Aldi, and I could find no pasta, apart from this, like, special buy, super fancy pasta. And I bought a bit of that, as you do. But I got the rest of the groceries. And then I went to the Tesco's next door to get the bits I couldn't get in the Aldi. And, literally, the pasta shelf was like a barren wasteland.
Why are they getting pasta? What is the obsession with pasta?
Because it'll last forever.
Oh.
But I mean, the question there is, couldn't you just get like some eggs and some flour and make your own pasta?
Yeah.
It's not difficult, really. It's not ideal, but it's not hard.
No. Oh dear, Lewis, I've had an email from it's not a company, is it? I've had from the scientists that are trying to find a cure for the coronavirus.
Oh yeah, they've sent it directly to you, have they?
Yeah, they've said, I know they normally send it to you, but they've sent it to me this time. They've said, get your, you've got no pasta, you big pluck.
I see, well, so that's good to hear.
Yeah.
I also... Because it was a morning when Chloe was working on an early shift. So she got me up as she was getting up. And I walked out of the house, walked to Aldi. And I think Aldi opened at 8. And I walked in the doors at like 8:10. And it was already packed as fuck. It was an incredibly stressful time to be in Aldi at 8:10 in the morning. People walking down the toilet paper aisle. Just be like, yeah, I could do with a 24-pack of toilet paper.
Yeah.
Because everybody's planning on violently shitting themselves for the next week.
Well, I always thought that the reason so many people were buying toilet roll was to pass the time.
Oh, with papers?
Well, yeah, could be, you know, but if people are self-quarantining, like, just themselves...
They need something to do.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of wanking going on, Lewis.
Oh, I see, yes. A furious amount, might say.
Do you know, that makes sense now, doesn't it? Because I always thought, why are people buying it? Why are people buying it in such large quantities? But if they're going to self-isolate, that'll be why.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we know. We've figured it out now.
We've cracked
the Da Vinci Code of self-isolation.
Oh, God. Did you hear what Steve did?
Steve Ronsley? No,
yeah,
I haven't. No.
Yeah, well, for those of you that don't know, Steve Ronsley is a very funny man who used to chaperone myself on the 4 o'clock club, and I saw a post that he put up on Facebook saying he was in the supermarket and he coughed, and this woman ran away screaming, and he did that until he got to the front of the queue.
Oh, God. The thing about that is there's this subreddit on Reddit, obviously, Shitty Life Pro Tips. It's like something that is, or unethical life pro tips, it might be called. It's like, yeah, that is a pro tip. During a virus outbreak,
definitely.
If you look ill in the supermarket, people will avoid you.
Yep.
But it's also quite unethical. You're like stressing out all these people that are just sat there trying to chill out.
Yeah, I don't think he was like screaming, I am ethical, as he was doing it. I am ethical!
That was that's going to be the one thing that tips him over the scales and sends him to hell. Be at the pearly gates. And St. Peter will be looking over his life.
That's right.
Going, ah, yes, well, you've done this, that's good. You've done this, that. Oh, no, you coughed at someone in Aldi.
Oh, no.
You better go to hell.
You coughed during a pandemic. Oh, God.
Did you ever see that comedy sketch? It's a really great pair of comedy guys, Jack and Dean. They made this comedy sketch about heaven and hell. Did you ever watch it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, they're really good. I'd recommend you check it out. But the idea was this guy died and got to heaven. And he was sat down with God. And he was talking to God across the table. And God said, okay, yeah, I've looked over your file. Looks like you've got eternity in heaven. So that's good, isn't it? And he was like, oh, yeah, that is good. And he said, oh, no, sorry. I've just seen here. When you were 7 years old, you stole a chocolate bar from the newsagents. Yeah, you're going to have to go to hell, but just for a bit. You're just going to have to go just for a couple of months or something. And in the scale of, like, eternity, that's no time at all. And this guy was stood there going, no, I don't want to go to hell ever. Why does that? I don't want to do that at all. So that's what is going to happen to Steve Rawnsley. He'll go to heaven. He'll go to hell for, like, a month. And then go back up to heaven.
Yeah, a preliminary hell session.
What do you think your own personal hell would be?
Oh, God.
I'm sure this topic will cheer us right up.
Just me in a room with Britney Spears playing very loud.
Right.
And I can't move and I've lost the ability to speak as well.
Okay.
That's my hell.
I see. I think this is the funny thing about trying to articulate your fears in a way, is people of previous generations when they were kids, they sort of retained their fears growing up a bit. Like people that are scared of spiders are probably also were scared of spiders when they were kids,
yeah.
And so on and so on. So they're great. Like in Harry Potter, they talk about what was it, the boggart that takes the form of whatever your greatest fear is, and for Ron it turns into a spider.
Yeah, I'd love to see him. Yeah. I'd love to see the boggart try and make my fear. Oh God, it's me in a room, because that's not scary on its own. I have to be in there experiencing it. Just looking at a video of me doing that is not scary. It's just, oh, there's me in a room with a Britney Spears.
Yeah, that's the point. Is like, if for a millennial Gen Z boggart, does it have to manifest an abstract representation of loneliness? Does it have to manifest you'll never pay off your student loans and rent is so extortionate that you'll never buy a house? It has to manifest those things. How does it do that?
Exactly. Like Twitter going down and shit.
J.K. Rowling can fuck off with a stupid brand of representation. That's what I want to know about Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Can what would a boggart turn into if my worst fear was dying alone? How is a boggart going to represent that?
Yeah. The boggart was gay the entire time and no one knew it. You know, you'd think people would figure that out despite no literary clues to suggest otherwise.
Oh my God, I know I complained about it last time, but I'm going to complain about it some more now. The thing that really gets me about it is like when she says things like it just wasn't relevant to the plot. It's like, what? No, I kind of understand that it's not relevant to the plot, but in that case, everybody in Harry Potter was always wearing roller skates.
Yeah.
But it was never mentioned because it just wasn't relevant to the plot.
That's right.
At Hogwarts, that's how they got round, was just wearing roller skates at all times.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And she said, why did you describe Harry Potter wearing glasses? How was that relevant to the plot?
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't make sense. It's not about the plot all the time. You have to build the characters in order to engage in the plot. If it's just plot and there's no characters and you're not invested in them, then there's no point in fucking reading it or watching it.
You tell her, Dan. You kick off at J.K. Rowling. Send her a sternly worded tweet.
Fucking idiot. the thing is, if I ever meet J.K. Rowling, I'll just be like, oh my God, I'm such a big fan. Oh my God, your writing is so amazing. And then she'll come across this podcast and she'll be like, what?
Oh God. I think I've run out of bullshit. Have you got any bullshit? Any little events that have happened in your life over the last week?
Uh,
Sounds like life's exciting in Scotland.
Yeah.
I mean, all I talked about was notebooks and Aldi, so it's not like I have a thrilling existence, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's the world's really gloomy at the moment, Lewis.
It is a bit, which is a bit depressing. It's like, in one day, it was like, oh, Tom Hanks has got coronavirus, and he's quarantined in Australia, the economy is crashing, oh, it's all good stuff.
Yeah, and like...
Sorry if you were trying to use this podcast for escapism, but we're confronting the issues head on.
And, wasn't it like 500 people in the UK like a couple of days ago, and now it's like 10,000 or something ridiculous like that?
I think I had saw a headline this morning that said in the UK 40,000 people have been tested for coronavirus and something like 1,500 have tested positive. I think a lot of the panic is from people saying, well, on the off chance that I've got it, I'm going to self-isolate, or I'm going to not go to work, or I'm going to, or whatever it might be, sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, you know, there's nothing you can do. If you get it, you get it, you know?
Yeah.
That's why that's my approach to it. I don't care. If I get it, I get it. I'm still going to be the same old disgusting person that I am. And I'm not changing for anyone. That's what I'm going to grow up to be. It's like, Dad, the virus is spreading. I don't give a shit.
If I get it, I get it. I don't care. But, Dad, it'll strip your flesh off in seconds. I don't care. If I get the fucking virus.
I'll tell it to fuck off. I'll put my shotgun at it. Then we'll see who's the real virus. Don't know why I went stereotypically South Northern American there, but there you go.
Well, I was very impressed. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
is that enough bullshit? Do you feel sated?
It's a good Jodie Whittaker impression. I'll give you, you know.
Yeah, oh, a flawless Jodie Whittaker impression, yeah.
I'm the doctor. Right, okay, I'm done. Let's do this.
Okay, this week, in this episode of Shouting Into the Void, we are talking about Best Picture 2020, Parasite.
Yes.
Directed by Bong Joon-ho, and I didn't Google it before the podcast, so I'm going to vamp now while
well,
I Google
it. Well, I've got the information, Lewis. It's okay. I came prepared.
Oh, go on. Yeah. Tell me some things.
It was also written by Bong... Oh, God. Joon-ho and Han Jin-wong. I'm so sorry about mispronouncing these names. It's starring Cho Yo Jung, Park So Dum, Chow Woo Sheik, Zhang Ji So, Kang Ho Song, Lee Sung Jin or Gin. That is, I feel terrible, Lewis.
Well, these, I think the thing is,
these incredibly skilled actors are getting their names just absolutely butchered by a very small Scottish man.
Okay. Well, this is a bloody intense film, isn't it?
Sorry, I'm still thinking about the names. No, yes, it is. It's an intense film.
Do you have an opening statement about this film? Because it's a corker and a half, isn't it? Crikey.
Yes. An absolute roller coaster of a tragic story, ultimately about class. I truly have never seen anything like it in my life. I was in absolute awe the entire time.
I feel absolutely the same. It was a joyride. It was absolutely fantastic. I could not fault it. Absolutely bloody great. Anyway, a haunting tale of the futility of greed in a late-stage capitalist society. Horrible in the best way.
Fucking hell, is this going to be a political one, Lewis?
I don't think it'll be a political one, but I think every now and then I might go, God, I fucking hate capitalism.
Yeah, I forget that you're a Marxist scholar.
Yes, I am, of course, a Marxist scholar, yes. A devout disciple, that's exactly what I am, yeah.
Okay, let's go to creepy room questions.
Okay, hit me with a creepy room question.
Who is the parasite?
I think the entire point is they are kind of all parasites.
Yeah.
I think the poor family are knowingly parasites, and the rich family semi unknowingly are parasites. It's like
because they rely on the poor to do their work.
Yeah, but it's like, to use a very quickly thought of analogy, it's like the poor family are, if they wanted pork, they would have to kill the pig, whereas the rich family are divorced from that idea. Sausages are a completely different thing to pigs, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's the horrible thing about that, this extreme richness and this extreme wealth gap sort of thing, is you can go into Primark and buy a t-shirt for £4. And you think, great, yeah, got a new t-shirt. And then, but if you trace the t-shirt back to wherever it was made, and it's like a child inhaling uranium fumes or something while he's assembling a t-shirt. Do you know what I mean? That's the terrible thing about this sort of blinkered capitalist existence.
Yeah, definitely. And the sort of divide between class goes till at all levels, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Because even though the Kims are really destitute, they sort of look down and detest those that live in the basement of the house. The bottom just keeps going until, you know, you're at bedrock, essentially, and it's just resentment all the way down, regardless of where you are, which is really, really sad.
Mm. And that was something I did quite like in this film, was the symbolism of literally sort of above and below, like a Downton Abbey thing almost.
Yeah.
And it's literally, even that night when it was raining and they escaped from the house, and they sort of ran down a hill, down some steps, down more steps, and kept going down, 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 down. And the flood water was getting deeper and deeper. And even the sort of visual motifs, it was reminiscent of heaven and hell. Like the very rich house is very sort of white and very sort of untreated wood that's very sort of like a light sort of brown beige type colour. And then the very poor people's flat is literally under the ground.
Definitely.
And it was bathed in sort of these red colours and these sort of, it did look heaven and hell. That was the visual motif I sort of picked up on.
Yeah.
But like, crikey, every single thing in this film, from things like visual motifs like that, it's all just bloody great. It's all just really good. There was no point in this film that I felt bored. There was no point in this film that I thought, that's not very clever, or that could have been better done. Every single point in this film, I was surprised, and there were twists and turns. It was really good. I liked it a lot.
It was really good. What I liked about the film is that there wasn't a true antagonist. It's just human beings doing what they think they should be doing. Which is good, because they didn't make the rich family idiots.
Yeah.
Either. You know, it was all the characters were very realistic.
Mm. Like, the mother of the rich family was kind of gullible, but she wasn't thick. Do you know what I mean?
No, she wasn't thick. A million webs were spun, so it was like, how could you not believe that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And the Kims are so fucking devious, aren't they? They're so smart. Just to come up with stuff like that, oh my god. But that's desperation for you, isn't it? It's a hell of a motivator.
Yeah, and I really did like, actually, speaking of their sort of scheming, I liked when the brother and sister of the Kim family, when they first got to the rich house and they were stood outside the gate, and before the brother could ring the bell, the sister looked at him and she was doing this sort of hand action, and she'd memorised her backstory in like a sing-song way. Yeah. And it sort of implies this is just their existence.
Yeah.
They're going to keep doing these schemes just to survive and live in this, literally, this underground hell full of insects and,
The perspectives could not be further apart.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, the way that they look at certain things, see when the flood happens and all the sewage water and it's raining, it's like the Kims are struggling to get their into their house and getting all the stuff. But the parks, they think it's beautiful, and they're like, "Oh my god, that's little! Look at that! You don't see that every day, do you?"
Yeah.
Meanwhile, maybe 30 minutes below them, there are these people just trying to survive.
Mm. And literally, the next day, I think the rich mum. This is what I took to calling them in my notes. the rich mum. Said something like, "Thank God for that rain last night," or that rain was amazing. Like she was on the phone.
Yeah.
They were talking about the way she said, "Thank God for that rain last night," and it's like, oh my God, it's such a different way of life, and it's one of these things where it's Oh, I'm gonna go a bit political now, but please feel free to stop me if it gets annoying. But it's like
go on.
One of these things how it's inherently unethical to be insanely wealthy. Like, to be at a Jeff Bezos level of wealth or a Bill Gates level of wealth, that's inherently unethical in a way. Because somewhere along the line, for that person to get that much wealth, there has to be some kind of fucking somebody over that's taking place. And, like, a really good example of this that's really easy to understand is, if you buy like a latte from a coffee shop, if that latte costs less than £2, as a general rule of thumb, as if that latte costs less than £2, somebody along the point is getting fucked over. Just based on the costs it takes for that coffee bean to have grown and then to be picked, and the farmer to have like shelled it and washed it, and then the roaster to have roasted it and blended it, and then the person selling it to you to have like ground it and brewed it, and do you see what I mean? There are so many different attributed costs that if a latte doesn't cost about £2, somebody's getting messed up in the process.
Well, I would argue that regardless of where you are on the economic scale, someone's getting fucked over anyway. But
yeah, I suppose.
You go into Primark and you buy a cheap top. It's like, who made that top? Where does it come from?
It
comes from people who have even less than the people that buy it, and it just keeps going down and down and down. It's like, I would argue that the entire system that we have is just full of inherent unethical, you know, practices.
Yeah, and that's why I hate this sort of extreme sort of late stage capitalism that we've somehow found ourselves in. It's ridiculous because, like you say, no matter your economic status, somebody is probably getting fucked over at some point. Because if you are the one getting fucked over in that you're a waiter or something, and you're getting paid minimum wage to do a very demanding menial job, and you are walking about all day and you decide, okay, I need to buy a new pair of shoes, but you haven't got very much money, so you can't afford to buy a pair of shoes made by some artisan bootmaker or something, which would be arguably an ethical thing to do, because then that money is going directly to somebody that has ethically sourced the leather and ethically sourced the rubber and whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So instead you're like, oh, right, well, I have to go and get, like, budget shoes, I suppose is the word for it, but, like, So and then whoever made those shoes, that'll be unethically sourced leather, and they might be unethically produced. And you see what I mean? I hate this very dog-eat-dog capitalist late-stage thing. It really infuriates me. And I know there's nothing I can really do about it, which is what infuriates me even more. Like, I try and grow my own food as much as I can, and I try and repair things when they break instead of just throwing them away and getting a new one, But there is really so much you can do, and it's this insane capitalism that really spoke to me in this film, of all these people are desperately, desperately working to be up high on the hill where the rich family are, even though they will never get there.
Yeah.
The end of the film, they're essentially in the same position they were in at the start of the film.
Yeah.
Despite the fact they sort of rose to Icarus's heights, and then the sun melted the wax and they fell back down again, sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, they're not even at the same place they started, because they've got two less family members.
Yeah, the dad is horrifically imprisoned forever.
Yeah.
And the sister's fucking dead. It's oh, God almighty.
It's insane.
It really is insane. You're right.
So what's the solution then?
I don't know. I suppose the solution is a combination of different things. I think it's a small incremental increase. I think, at heart, I'm a bit of a socialist. Like, I know that's sort of a dirty word in the political landscape to some degree. Like, I remember watching this thing at the time of the Trump election. There was this American person who said in an interview, "I really am scared that one day our country is going to be a socialist country. I am terrified that that's going to happen." And you're thinking, yeah, but why is that bad? You haven't really explained why you think socialism's bad. And I think...
They mean different things.
They do,
In our country, in America. Like, I would argue that most people on Fox and Friends who say the word socialist, I think what they mean is that they just equate like communist to socialist.
And
they can't really see the difference, and it's like, but here, socialist generally just means like left wing. Mm. It's always been used as a sort of misnomer for left wing people. It's like, yeah, I'm a bit of a socialist. It's like, I would argue that it's not as dirty over here as it is in America.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, but yeah, I think that is my political leaning anyway, is sort of towards the socialist end of the spectrum. Is the way to resolve this insane wealth gap issue, which is what this film highlights so well, is tax the rich. Do you know what I mean? Does Jeff Bezos really need $100 billion or $300 billion in his bank account? No, he doesn't. Of course he doesn't. He could never spend that money ever.
Yeah.
Like, I think I read somewhere something insane, like if you got paid £1,000 a day since the day that Jesus was crucified, you would still not today have as much money as Jeff Bezos.
Now, I'm not...
I'm not
disagreeing with you, right? But I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
For the sake of entertainment. Why... Just because he doesn't need it, why shouldn't he have it? Why does it belong to someone else?
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't belong to someone else. But I think, from my point of view, it's. Say I went and bought a bag of bread rolls or something.
Yeah.
And I knew for dinner tonight I need 4 because I'm doing burgers for however many people. But this bag has 6 in. What do I do with the remaining 2? I know I'm not going to eat them. I know in this situation I could put them on a compost heap, or I could do a bread and butter pudding or something like that. But say I've got 2 left, I think, right, well, do I just throw them in the bin and throw them out, or do I go next door to a family that might be a bit more disadvantaged than me and say, hi, I don't want these, do you want them for free? Mm-hmm. Why not extend that hand of kindness and try and help my fellow man, as it were? That's what I don't get about this, about Jeff Bezos's... I understand he has... I mean, it's a podcast, so you can't see, but he has earned this, and I'm doing inverted air quote things, but like, he has earned this money.
Yeah.
But on the same level, like Keanu Reeves for The Matrix got paid $8 million, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I think he kept $2 million and said, this is basically as much money as I'll ever need for the rest of my life, and donated the rest to Amnesty International.
Yeah. But
it's kind of insane to think, yeah, he earned that money, and it is his money, and it's his choice what to do with it, and I'm not trying to tell him what to do, but is it not better to help your fellow human beings?
It certainly is, but what I'm arguing is that you can't... you're going to be doing an unethical thing regardless of what you do, because Jeff Bezos might say, well, I don't want to give it away, it's mine, I've earned it, it belongs to me. So an unethical thing will take place, because you'll be taking something off of someone that isn't yours in order to do something that will help a lot more people. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely a good thing. Helping a lot of people is a good thing, but to pretend that it's not, you know, you're sort of guilt-free from... It's theft, essentially. You know, you could look at it that way. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm just playing devil's advocate. So it's unethical, in a sense, to just sort of say, well, if you're not going to give it away, we're just going to tax you and we're going to take it off you.
I think the issue I take with that is the taxation is theft line. That's a very emotional judgment, in a way. And it's sort of saying in a strange way, like, yeah, I earned this money, I should be entitled to keep it. And it's like...
Yeah.
I don't know. I hate the idea of earning $1 billion and then thinking, yep, well, I'm going to keep all of this for all time. I'm not going to help anybody. Yeah. I fundamentally disagree with that mindset, I think.
Just to be absolutely clear, I agree with you that people who earn more should probably pay in a bit more.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's a fair way of doing it. It's like, you've earned a lot of money, you know, put some in and help some people who need it. That's, completely on board with that. I'm just playing devil's advocate for the sake of, so that it's not just us preaching.
Tax
the rich. Do you know what I mean? But it's an interesting argument, because it's like, I would argue that whatever system we adopt, human beings aren't, we're not very ethical people, you know.
I think the lizard brain takes over, and I think in a time of desperation, and you do become less ethical. Yeah,
because, you know, it's like, as destitute as the Kims are, they are not ethical people. You know, they're quite happy to break the rules to get ahead and you know, leave the people that they live around behind, because they don't want betterness for everyone else, they want it for themselves. And I would argue that if they got to that, they'd probably just be as bad, or if not worse, as the Parks.
Yeah, and that's sort of shown at that part where the Parks are going on that camping trip. And the Kims are sat in their living room drinking their whiskey and eating their food, and as soon as they have access to this luxury, they revel in it like a pig in mud, sort of thing.
And they push that dog aside and let, just sort of, you know, just become very laissez-faire and just sort of, oh, you know, and just lie about, and just, they look like almost like Greek gods getting fed grapes and stuff like that. And it's like, it's really sad. It's like, yeah, you've worked incredibly hard, but it's just, and it's a system that benefits no one but the rich. But it's, you know, none of it is yours, essentially.
Yeah.
Which makes it really sad, and it's like they're reveling in getting a small piece of someone else's pie, when it could just be much better that maybe everyone should get their own slice, you know.
And that's what really annoys me about, like, you look at the situations like this, and even in other countries and stuff as well. It's like, people are thrilled to get a very, very small job where they aren't getting paid a lot of money. They are thrilled for that because they know that the alternative is living on the street. Yeah. They are thrilled to be living to be doing a humiliating job, if that makes sense. It's just like, oh, I don't like it.
Do you know,
I hate this late stage capitalism. I hate it.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now before I get on to universal basic income or something.
Stay on your soapbox. We can just disclaim that this is a political episode.
Yeah.
And because I'm, you know, it's an important topic. It's like, and like, I know people just want to go onto podcasts and listen to whatever they want to listen to, but it's like, there comes a point where you have to speak about it, and you can't just sort of, you know, well, enough about that, let's go back to talking about pasta straws and shit.
yeah it's one thing that did get me about it was they all embody this capitalist mindset of like, I've got to be the best, not I am content with what I have. Want more. I always want more. And that situation where I've forgotten their names already. The poor family discover there's this secret underbasement sort of thing, and the mum of the poor family goes down into the basement, and they all fall down, and the lady who's allergic to peaches takes a video of them, and then later on in the evening they're all sat in the living room. And Peach Lady is like, I could just send this message. I could just send this video. But of course the reality is, she wants to send that video so that life is better for her as a one person outfit.
Yeah.
But then the reality is, if the Parks got that video, they're all fucked. They're all out on the street. Because it's like, yeah, okay, you were a good housekeeper, but you were also keeping your husband in our basement that we didn't know we had.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you not aware that this is a terrible thing? Oh, it's they're all fucked, but they're all wanting to push each other down to get on top.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of like lions leaving their den for a little while and hyenas coming in just yeah. to see. Like, that's what that mindset does to you. It removes decency and compassion and warmth, and it's just like, no, getting yourself to where you need to be is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And hang everyone else. You know, it's like, it's a very destructive way to live, in my opinion.
It is, yeah. It's this is going away from politics and becoming a bit more hippy dippy, but there's this idea at the minute, scientists have come up with it, this gratitude journaling idea. Have you heard of this?
No.
The idea is that because we spend so much of our time influenced by social media and by things to you must always be living your best life, pursuing your dream job, and so on, that so often we're just beating ourselves down by looking at Facebook and seeing a targeted advert for you should have this new thing rather than what the thing that you currently have or whatever it might be. The idea is that if you log your gratitude and say, today I am grateful for even something as small as my coffee was extra tasty this morning, or I am grateful that I had cereal for breakfast because I prefer it to toast, or even something like that. The idea is that then you're able to look upon your life in a more gratitude-based way rather than a I want more way. And that's supposed to improve your happiness. And I haven't tried it. I keep meaning to, and I keep writing it on my to-do list, like, make a gratitude log. But I've never actually got around to it. But, like, I understand living in destitute conditions is the worst thing. But, like, I don't know, maybe being happier with what you have while you're on the way to being on the top. Maybe that's a recipe for slightly less murder than what happened in this film.
Yeah, but that logic doesn't really pan out, though, does it? Because people who are on the bottom can't be happy with what they have.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It is a flawed system. Money does buy happiness, but only to a certain extent.
Yeah, but it's and I would argue that you could maybe it would maybe, I think that's a very sort of upper class, middle class thing. That gratitude thing,
because
people on the bottom, I don't think have the luxury of just going, oh well, you know, I should be sort of happy with the way I live. And it's just, you know, it's
if you don't have what you need to live, then it's hard to be happy with where you are. Yeah, I understand.
And it's again, I think it's just for the people who have a bit more, and it's them that should be a bit more grateful, and you know, like us, you know, just sort of recognize that, yeah, you're doing well, and a lot of other people aren't.
Mm.
And you should, you know, do your bit to make sure that a lot more people are doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of decency.
Whew. Well, now that we've had a big old capitalist, anti-capitalist rant.
Yeah.
By the way,
I am not against the idea of, you know, buying things and selling things. I am against it when it comes to the point of where it's only the people that have all the money can really benefit from the system. I'm not advocating doing away with it all and just, you know,
going back to trading carrots for potatoes.
Yeah, fucking bartering, you know, putting on your moleskin hats and marching to Moscow under the red flag. I'm not advocating that. I'm just advocating a bit of decency. Just you know, that's all it takes.
Yeah, it's this the idea of the super rich, I think, is where capitalism falls apart for me.
Yeah.
Like buying and selling things, it makes sense to have a unified currency, but like and to buy and sell things using that, but it doesn't make sense for there to be 1% of people that control 99% of the wealth. That it's illogical, and it infuriates me.
What am I going to say, Lewis?
Everything in moderation. Is that what's coming next? Hey!
That's exactly it. It's like, there has to be a way for people to be able to do well, but also regulation when, you know, people that are doing well is off the expense of many, many others.
Yeah.
Bit of balance, bit of middle of the road. A boring old centrist, Lewis, that's what I am. A big old, fat, boring centrist.
Anyway, back to the film.
Well, it is the film.
Well, yeah, it is the film, that's true. But a more film-centric question. Do you think the son was actually planning to go to university?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think in the back of his mind it might be a thing that's like, yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to have a degree and get good jobs and whatever, but on the same level, he doesn't really seem to be actively wanting to part to do that sort of thing. I think it's things like that, I think.
I mean, that's a very sort of, it's a long way to get to get yourself up in the world, going to university.
Oh,
you know,
that's Christ,
years
yeah.
and years. Where I think from his perspective, he saw it as, well, I can go to university, spend years of my life studying for something, and then maybe get a job at the end of it, or I can use my craftiness and try and ingratiate myself into this very wealthy family. I would and if I was him, I'd probably have done what he did as well. Hopefully with not as much death, but you know,
yeah.
It's like, what a twist that was when they were in the basement. I was like, oh my god, what is going on?
Yeah, the surprise under basement.
What is this film becoming? And it's like, oh, it's a bunker for like, when North Korea attacks. Oh well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's at no point did I think that's a weird thing. That doesn't make any sense. It's like, yeah, okay, it makes sense. I mean, it's weird that the people that own the house didn't know it was there. It's weird that it was never on the deed or anything. But
yeah,
it does make sense. Yeah.
How so? What's really scary is that there could be a hundred different scenarios that are very similar being played out in all the other houses South Korea. It's shocking, and not just maybe all over the world. It's not a case of, oh, this is far in the future and this could only happen. This could happen now. You could probably end up seeing this on the news at some point. You know, local family massacre at party type thing. It's like that. You would see that on the news.
Yeah. And even in a less deathy thing, it's like you can see on the news. I could see the headline: "Man missing presumed dead was found to be living in the basement of."
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not outside the realm of possibility.
No, definitely not. And that's what makes it so horrifying. I have a question.
Go on, hit me.
Why did Parasite and Joker do so well at the Oscars?
I think it's because they both have a sort of a very timely anti-establishment message.
Yeah.
Like, I think at this point in time...
Do you think that resonates with a lot of people?
Yeah, I do, to be honest. Like, I think in the US especially, which is where, obviously, the Academy Awards are based.
Yeah.
Like, no president has ever had such a high disapproval rating. So many people dislike him and regret voting for him, even. So, I think there is a very high anti-establishment mood at the minute of, like, we need to sort of overthrow Trump, or we need to overthrow Boris, or whatever it might be, because there's a great feeling of dispiritedness and we're not happy with the current state of affairs. And, like, Joker especially spoke about this a lot more, and it spoke about, like, an outsider that just hates the system and hates that he has to worship the system in order to make it work.
Yeah.
And I think this, it speaks about it in a different, like a more financial sense, but it also has a similar message, and I think that does resonate with a lot of people.
Well, the difference is that Arthur wasn't a sort of activist or a revolutionary. He was just someone who craved the attention that he got from it. It was a complete accident that he was involved. It was, you know, he says it himself. He's like, I don't believe in anything. I'm not political. And it's just like he got what he wanted from it, you know, and while being, you know, heralded as a symbol. And that's like, it's this sort of, like, resentment only breeds resentment in my mind. And while it's very useful to sort of, you know, critique and condemn a lot of the practices of this late stage capitalism, it's like, well, what are we going to replace it with? You know, we need to think about it very carefully, because just going on a grudge politics basis for reality is going to do no one any favours.
Completely, yeah. It's very easy for me to say, yeah, I support the idea of universal basic income, and I support this, and I support... But then it's the doing it is the hard part.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's like... It can either go the majority of the people vote for it, or there's like some sort of coup or like revolution to sort of just say no, we've had enough.
Mm.
You know, it's people think, oh, that's years off, or there's no way that'll happen. I'm not too sure. I think it's, you know, people are very angry and people are very afraid. And I think that whipping people up like that is very, very plausible.
Definitely, yeah.
It could definitely happen.
I think what scares me most about both what you said and this film is sort of the blinkered, echo-chambered sort of nature of society in a strange way. Like, yeah. If you only read The Sun, and if you only watch, I don't know what it's called now, it's Good Morning Britain, is that what it's called? If you only watch, your political opinion will be swayed entirely by Piers Morgan and sensationalist journalism,
or indeed The Guardian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I know some people that just read The Guardian and nothing else, and it's just like everything they say is completely. It's as if you're reading, you know, from both sides. It's as if you're reading a sort of stock video argument for XXX, do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, completely. That's what affects me most about it. It's like a really good example of this sort of blinkered existence in this film is when there's a light in the house that's like flickering on and off, and at the time we know it's because the bloke in the basement is smashing his head against the button or whatever insane thing it is that he's doing. But yeah. The wife of the rich family says, the sensor in that light's broken. How funny is that? That's really weird, isn't it? She's not even capable of believing that somebody could be controlling that light. That's not even in her sphere of what she sees in the world, sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And, that's actually very interesting now that you brought that up. Mm. It's the... And it extends to the Kims as well. Like, they're in there. It's like, no, we're going to do whatever it takes to get to, you know, where we want to be.
Mm-hmm. And in their dealings with that pizza girl at the start, when she's just stood in the street saying, well, one in every four is entirely unusable. And then they are literally sort of crowding round her and intimidating her. And it is an intimidating scene.
Yeah.
They're very ruthless.
And it's all circumstantial. That quote, she's nice because she's rich.
Yeah. You know,
it's like,
yeah.
Rich people can afford to be nice and be decent, and it's like, but if you've got nothing or next to nothing, you can't afford to be compassionate. You've got to do what you can to survive.
It becomes about
And
it's,
then
at
some point it goes too far, as it always does, and the rich people are just completely oblivious to what's going on, and they don't care about really anyone else but themselves, and oh, everything's lovely and light, and oh, it's all good. And the people who have got nothing are oblivious to, you know, you're partaking in this unethical system selfishly to get yourself up, and while that's probably necessary for your situation, it's like, you're not making things better, you're just making another incredibly wealthy group of people that don't care about the people behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely dog eat dog, and it's horrible.
It really, really is.
It's horrible.
I'm quickly flicking through my notebook trying to support questions.
Do you think he'll ever make the money?
No, I don't think he will.
No.
It's As he was saying that speech, I thought, is this just going to be a really bleak ending where he's never ever going to see his dad again? Is that what we're building to? And it did. I was like, that's horrible. Absolutely horrible.
It's horrific. See, despite how horrible the context for the film is, it's actually really funny.
It's a black comedy,
it's so fucking hilarious, some of the parts.
It's just, yeah. Oh, God.
What an absolute amazing film.
Absolutely amazing film. Completely amazing film. It's, every single line is packed with meaning, and like the one that really got me at the time I was watching it was the poor dad went into the underbasement and spoke to the bloke that was living down there and said, "How can you live down here? It's horrible. It's like gross and dirty. How can you live down here?" But it's like, well, your house was literally flooded by sewage. Do you know what I mean? It's forgotten its roots.
Sewage, yeah.
The second he gets to the top of the hill, sort of thing.
Definitely.
Oh, crikey. It was so tense. All the way through, it was so tense.
Yeah. My arse cheeks were clenched the entire time. I was like, oh my God.
But I was... I think there was no point where I wasn't interested. I was really... Oh, it was really good.
I think it's good because it'll also give more of an opportunity for people to sort of watch subtitled films
in
different languages, because it's like... If you're just used to listening to your own language, I've got to admit, I went in, even though I like stuff like Death Note and stuff like that, I went in going, oh my God, I don't have to read this entire thing, do I? And then I went in, and it was irrelevant, and it was just, I was completely transfixed on this film.
Yeah, I think it's with a lot of these, with a lot of foreign language films, there's a surprising amount of lines that you kind of don't need to read, because you can sort of guess them from context.
Yeah,
like, from tone and context, and if you know what's going on, you can sort of, you can tell, oh, such and such is angry because this other person did this, or you can sort of guess, you can sort of figure it out. A bit of a question. The poor dad, when he sort of imprisoned himself in the bunker under the house, was he guilty? Genuinely guilty? Was that him sort of buying out of this sort of destitute world and sort of saying, well, I guess I've just got to imprison myself. I killed a guy. I'm not going to go to prison, but I'm going to go to this mysterious bunker prison.
I don't know how much of that is just his sort of survival instinct kicking in. I would imagine that there's some sort of... Well, I don't know whether he... I don't know why, from his perspective, I don't know why he would think he would need to atone. So the guy just, sort of holds his nose every time he sees him and just sort of goes, you've got a smell. It's like... people who ride the subway have got a smell about them. It's like, that's just fucking sick. And all this is happening around, everyone's dying and stuff like that, he just sort of keeps holding his nose.
Yeah.
As if that's the most important thing, and it just snaps and is like, no, I'm gonna do you in.
And it's that thing about the smell. If you replace, people who ride the subway have got a smell. If you replace people who ride the subway with anything else, it is much more obvious how offensive that is.
Yeah.
If you say, oh yeah, such and such has, he's got a bit of a smell about him. Do you know what I mean? It's just
what he means is that poor people stink. That's what he means.
Yeah, yeah.
People who ride the subway have got a special smell. It's like, no, what you're saying is that people that are lower on the chain than you are stink, and you find them revolting, which is horrible. Oh God, to sit in the back of a car and hold your nose as this person drives you from A to B is just so disrespectful. So I'd imagine that with your daughter bleeding out and then this person who's very well off just does this, I would imagine that makes you snap, and I probably, if I was in his position, I would go, well, what have I got to atone for? But
I know what you mean.
That's just me.
I was really an interesting character point, I thought, about the rich dad was when they were doing it was like a Cowboys and American Indians type thing. It was like when they had the headdresses and the face paint and stuff on, they were crouching behind the bushes.
Yeah.
And you could tell poor dad was sort of like, yeah, I don't really want to do this. This is a bit humiliating. And rich dad was very quickly like, well, then I'm not going to pay you. I'll push you back out onto the street. I know how much you depend on me for your existence. And that's...
remember, I'm your boss and stuff like this.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's...
He's more than happy to hold, essentially, his entire livelihood at ransom.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. It really is.
It's just, yeah, it is. There's no other word for it. Well, with that cheery note, I'm out of notes.
I think I might be out of notes. It's lots of these are just things about me vaguely ranting about, God, I bloody hate capitalism, and greed is the source of all the problems in this film and all this sort of stuff. It's like...
The message is very clear-cut, and again, because it's such a good film, it's like there's only so much you can say about it.
It's if you haven't seen this film, I don't know why you would have listened to this podcast, but go and see it, because bloody hell, it's good.
It's really good.
Comparing this to Joker, I can see why this won Best Picture, I have to say.
Definitely.
I think Joker was really good, but it's very rare you watch a film and you think, whoa, fucking hell, that's good. And at the end of this film, I thought, fucking hell, that was so good.
As much as I love Joker, it's essentially Taxi Driver with a Batman backdrop. It's it sort of cheated a wee bit, because it was like, oh, well, you know, it's a character study, but of the Joker. It's like, that's what drew people in. And despite the fact it was well made as well, but it's like, I don't think it would have done nearly as well had it been called Fleck.
Yes, do you know what I mean? Completely. You might have got a few Joaquin Phoenix diehard fans that went to see it, but no, you wouldn't really, apart from that.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you got a closing statement, Cocker?
I do. A hilarious and yet horrifying look at how class divides can utterly destroy lives. Decency is very circumstantial in my view, and the Parks are able to play the Parks are able to play by the rules because they are in a fortunate positions, whereas the Kims aren't.
Yep, couldn't agree more. It's classism is the pinnacle of this bleak existence. The rich are afraid of the poor are afraid of the rich, but nothing will ever, ever change the status quo. It's...
Yes.
Oh, crikey. I feel like I could watch this film on loop and still not really... I feel like when it ended, I forgot what was happening, what had happened in the film. Yeah. Like, that's such a bleak, horrific ending. It's, oh my God.
I felt as if I was slapped in the face, just sort of... Whoosh, and you're just sort of stood there in shock.
It's like when the son is reading this letter aloud and he's saying, I'm going to earn a lot of money, I'll buy the house and move in, and it's like... Oh God! And the ending is no, he isn't. He's still living in the basement that was flooded by sewage. He's
not gonna get that. He's not gonna get there, and he's probably never gonna see his dad again.
Yep. Oh crikey!
Fucking hell! Jesus Christ!
Well, I hope this has been a nice cheery one for you.
Yes.
I think that's it. Do we need to do some shilling? Do we need to talk about what's coming next week?
Yeah, let's do some shilling. Okay. I am on Instagram. At O'Hiram, I'm on Facebook at Daniel Kerr, I'm on Twitter at Kerzo2000. Lewis, what are you on?
Well, after I've stopped joining, I am Instagram at Lewis_Brindley. I am on Facebook, I have a Facebook page actually, Lewis Brindley. I am on Twitter at LewisBrindley4. The podcast is hosted by Podomatic. So you can listen to the podcast there if that tickles your fancy. If not, you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer. We have a YouTube channel, which is slowly getting everything uploaded to it. It takes about a million years to upload a podcast to YouTube, so I'm going very slowly, but I'm on it. I've got a little table where I'm slowly crossing off each podcast as I upload it. When I fill in this table, I might actually just explode with joy.
You're like the guy in the basement, just sort of, that's all you do all day, just...
Upload, yeah. I smash my forehead against the upload button. Yep.
We've got a PayPal donate button, we're on Patreon, give us your dosh, and we'll keep talking about how we're going to overthrow the capitalist system.
Yep, eat the rich, that's what you're paying for.
Yes, peace, bread, land, all power to the Soviets.
Oh crikey!
Oh God!
I believe that might be. Oh no, we have to talk about what we're doing next week.
Yes, that's right. We're doing Arrival, if I believe correctly.
We are indeed. Yeah. If I also believe correctly, it is a film starring Amy Adams.
Whoa! Wait a minute, Lewis. We're not even at next week yet. Like, give me some time to write down the people that are in it. I mean, you try to show me up.
Well, this is a bit of a self-indulgent one for me. I really like this film. I really like it. Go and check it out if you haven't, so that we can all talk about it next week.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. That is the end.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.